Then, of course, came the gale. As rain drummed down on the ships of the Greek fleet, so the winds, screaming in from the southeast over the bleak strand of Artemisium, quickly shredded any prospect of a midnight getaway. Fortunately for the Allies, however, that was not the limit of the storm damage, for wreckage from the evening's battle soon began to be swept up channel towards the enemy positions, where it fouled the oars of the rolling patrol ships and filled the harbours with bobbing spars and corpses. Buffeted by yet another storm, and still licking their wounds from the unexpected mauling they had received at the hands of the Greeks, it was now the turn of the Persians to be thrown into a panic, for they imagined that the hour of their doom had come. As it proved, they imagined wrong. The harbours in which the fleet had taken sanctuary the previous day served to shelter it from the worst of the gale. No such refuge, however, for the 200 ships sent south around Euboea, for the savage eastern coast of the island, with its jagged rocks and cliffs, was a miserable place to be caught during a storm. The armada, it is said, running blind before the wind and rain, was shattered upon a notorious black spot known as the Hollows. By the following afternoon, reports of the shipwreck were reaching Artemisium, and the Greek admirals, confident that their lines of retreat were no longer threatened, could afford to breathe a huge sigh of relief. Not that they had any intention now of abandoning their forward position. Prospects for holding the front suddenly appeared as rosy as they had looked bleak the day before. Good news was coming in from everywhere. Reinforcements, 53 ships fresh from Athens, the destruction in an evening hit-and-run raid of a squadron of Cilician ships, the briefing brought by Abronicus, the liaison officer, that Leonidas and his men had withstood a second day of hard pounding at the hot gates. But the true test for the Allied fleet and its ability to hold off the enemy was still to come. The Persians, labouring desperately to make their remaining ships fully seaworthy again, had not yet attempted to smash the linchpin of the whole Greek line that, if forced, would open the way to Thermopylae, the straits between Euboea and the mainland. The third day of battle dawned, and the Greeks, watching from Artemisium, could have had little doubt that the moment of truth was coming at last. Squadron after squadron of the barbarian fleet, Phoenician, Egyptian, Ionian, began massing in the open channel. Now, after all the skirmishing, it was to come, the first full frontal assault by the great king's navy. Rowing out to block its passage, men who had first pulled on an oar just months before braced themselves for the fight. Less mobile than its enemy, the Greek fleet, having plugged the straits, then opted to wait for the Persians to attack. The impact, when it came, was pulverizing. All day the Greeks fought desperately to keep the enemy at bay. Somehow, despite the fearful battering they received, the Greeks managed to hold the straits, but only just. Numerous ships were sunk or captured, losses which the smaller Allied fleet could ill afford. Many others were disabled. The Athenians, who had borne the brunt of the enemy assault, had a full half of their fleet put out of action. Prospects of holding the straits the following day looked bleak. Disconsolately, the Greeks began gathering wreckage from the battle, piling it up on the sand to serve as pyres for their dead, while their admirals, anxious faces lit by the funeral fires, debated what to do next. By now, the locals, who had seen the shattered state of the Greek fleet and drawn their own conclusions, were driving their livestock down to the seafront in the hope that they might be included in any evacuation. Themistocles, recognizing that the abandonment of Artemisium might indeed be a necessity, and not wishing his already battle-weary men to have to row through the night on empty stomachs, ordered the cattle barbecued. Yet the mood along the fire-dotted beach that night, even amid all the weariness and disappointment, was not one of despair. The Greeks had faced the great king's armada in open battle and lived to tell the tale. Great things had been achieved at Artemisium. The Allied fleet remained intact as a fighting force, and withdrawal, if it did come, would be strategic and orderly. Not that any final decision could be made either way until news had arrived from the hot gates, for synchronization with Leonidas and his army remained the key to the whole campaign. And none of the navy knew what had happened at Thermopylae. As dusk turned to night, breathing in the mingled scents of beef and burning human flesh, casting their gaze across the channel to the distant lights of the Persian positions, they waited for Abronicus to deliver his daily briefing from the Spartan king. When his small galley arrived, the sailors, gathered around their campfires, were still at their supper. The ships had not yet been readied for departure. No sense of crisis gripped the camp. One glimpse of Abronicus's face, however, as he stumbled through the shallows, and all that changed.